listening to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of the Wheeler Report. I'm joined by Badger Institute Policy Analyst Julie Grace, UW-Madison Law School Associate Professor Cecilia Klingel, and State Public Defender Kelly Thompson. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
So, Cecilia and Julie, I'd like to start by having you explain and give us a brief history into the report that the Badger Institute just put out titled Ex-Offenders Under Watch. So what was your program?
Sure. So the beginning of this report actually started about 3 years ago when my boss, the president of the Badger Institute, Mike Nichols, reached out to Cecilia and approached her to see if she'd be willing to do some research independently. We did help her secure some open records requests, but just to look into why so many people on supervision were failing. And so Cecilia thankfully agreed, and 3 years later we have this report where she looked at 189 revocation cases. And I'll let Cecilia talk more about that. But then based on one of her findings, we went a step further. And because Wisconsin has such long lengths of supervision, probation and extended supervision, we decided to look at exactly how long those lengths were in 2018 specifically.
Perfect. Cecilia, can you talk a little bit about the research that you did for this report?
Sure. So I broadly study community supervision, probation and parole in states all around the country. And so it was really exciting for me when the Badger Institute expressed some interest in taking a deeper look at what's happening in Wisconsin supervision specifically. So this particular study took a snapshot of cases drawn mostly from late 2016 in which people who were served in terms of probation or extended supervision, which is similar to parole here in Wisconsin, where individuals were revoked. That is, their ability to live in the community was removed and they were either placed in jail or prison as a result of alleged violations of the rules of their supervision. And I looked at those cases and read the histories of the people's time on supervision, looked at their criminal conviction records as well, and tried to draw out some common themes about what seemed to be the gaps in our system that are leading people sometimes not to succeed on supervision.
Okay. So, Kelly, why is this important to the State Public Defender's Office?
Well, thank you, Gwen. The report is very important to the Public Defender's Office, and we were excited to have the research done by Professor Klingel as well as put together by the Badger Institute, because we represent, this is one of the types of cases that we represent in. So on average, we represent somewhere between 7,700 to 8,000 of these types of cases, these revocation cases, both in probation revocation cases and extended supervision cases. So it is important for us to be able to look back and forward to see why so many of our clients are not succeeding on these types of cases. So we may have the original criminal cases, they're placed on some type of supervision, and then we're seeing them revoked quite frequently. And it's important, as a not just as the public defenders representing in this these cases, but as a system and as one of the justice partners in the system, to look what we're doing wrong and how can we, more importantly, how we can improve and provide better opportunities for success for our clients.
So I just want to be clear. When we're looking at these individuals that this report is based on, these are people who have already gone through the criminal justice system once and have been found guilty, whether it was through a plea agreement or a jury or something, and they are serving their term in one way or another, and now there's a new infraction or something that has happened to bring them back into the criminal justice system again. And so these are not new offenders. These are people who are already in the system. Is that correct?
That is correct. So these individuals have been in the system, are part of the criminal justice system, and then these revocation proceedings, they go through kind of a more administrative process with the agents and with an administrative law judge if they go through a revocation hearing.
Okay, so a revocation hearing itself is, or a revocation is, you were originally given a sentence, and now for some reason, whether it's parole or probation, which we'll get into in a little bit, you are in the community. And now we think you've done something wrong, so we're going to bring you back in and discuss or talk about whether or not we're going to extend your sentence, or we're going to put you in jail, we're going to put you in prison. We're talking about changing and bringing somebody back in and possibly changing their sentence or changing how they're going to serve their sentence.
Correct. So go ahead,
Cecilia.
Oh, no, I said that that's right. So the key to a sentence of probation or extended supervision or parole is that an individual is allowed to serve their punishment time in the community, but they have to follow rules. So we call it a conditional release, that there is a list of rules that people have to follow, and if they don't comply with those rules, there are consequences. That is always revocation, but sometimes it can be revocation. And when someone is revoked, then we say you can no longer serve your sentence in the community. Instead, we're going to impose a different kind of punishment on you, and typically that's going to be a sentence to jail or prison.
Okay. All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to look a little bit more into the report and some of the details. And I specifically want to start by defining some of these terms so that people know exactly what we're talking about.
The Wisconsin Counties Association represents Wisconsin's 72 counties at both the state and federal level. Learn more about how counties impact your community at wicounties.org.
Welcome back to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of the Wheeler Report, and I'm joined today by Kelly Thompson, the State Public Defender, Cecilia Klingel, the Associate Professor at UW-Madison Law School, and Julie Grace, the Policy Analyst for the Badger Institute. So can you guys start by explaining extended supervision, parole, probation, revocation? I think there's probably, we don't all know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Why don't you go ahead and start, Julie?
Sure. So extended supervision and probation are very similar. Like Cecilia said earlier, it's basically when offenders are serving either their full sentence or the remainder of their sentence in the community. Extended supervision terms are basically attached to imprisonment. So first someone is sent to prison, they serve their prison term, and then they serve the remainder of their sentence in the community. Whereas probation is actually an alternative to incarceration.
Okay.
But like Cecilia was also saying, both extended supervision and probation have these rules of supervision. And so that's why they're usually lumped together, because they're very similar in that sense.
So Kelly, can you give me some idea of, like, what are some of these rules? If I was charged with a crime and they said I was getting extended supervision instead of going to jail, what kind of rules are they talking about that I have to follow?
So again, so you could have probation instead of going to jail, but the extended supervision part would be after following a prison term. So either way, see, it's almost like what's similar is what we used to think of as the old time, what we call parole.
Right.
Extended supervision was a lot like parole, and probation was usually, you could have some conditional jail time and then probation, but it was what we oftentimes considered an alternative to jail. But the rules are significant, and that's one of the issues that I was so glad to see that the report touched on, because you have the agent and probation and parole, Department of Corrections, has a standard set of rules. So it could be everything from who you communicate with in the community. It could be your use of the internet or computers. It could be curfew. It could be some type of treatment, alcohol and drug treatment. It could be educational opportunities you're supposed to be taking advantage of. It could be work. It could be random screens of some sort if you have a substance abuse issue. So we have all of these standards. Then if you are in a certain classification, such as a sex offender, you're going to have additional rules. And then on top of that, oftentimes judges, who are the ones sentencing someone to probation or giving that prison and extended supervision sentence, they may have additional rules that they want someone to follow. So by the time someone is actually put on probation or extended supervision, the list of rules is long. And what I think the hope has always been, or at least in more recent years, as we're looking at more risk assessments and people's needs assessments, is that we're tailoring those those rules of supervision to what that individual needs. Not everybody, I won't need the same thing as you, I won't need the same thing as Julie or as Cecilia or someone else, but I need something that's going to help me succeed. And that's, that I think is a hope. I don't think we've gotten there yet.
Okay. So, Julie, the report talks about the number of people who are in prison and the number of people that are on supervision and the amount that are then to be released.
Right.
So can you put those numbers in perspective for us?
Sure. So like I said, following Cecilia's report, we looked at all felony cases of offenders who were released to extended supervision or probation in 2018. And so that totaled 2,100 cases about, 14,000 that were sentenced to probation and about 7,300 that were sentenced to extended supervision in 2018. We did exclude sex offenders from that count because we assumed that they would skew the data a little bit because they're typically sentenced to longer terms than some other individuals.
So how many people do we have in prison?
About 24,000.
24,000. And how many people do we have that are serving some type of sentence but are in the community?
I think it's about 65 or 66,000.
Okay. So if I'm looking at that, we're at over 30,000. How many of those people who are in prison right now will be out next year or out in the next 2 years? I mean, how fast are we turning people out into the communities? You know, off the top of your heads.
Well, I believe the last figure I heard that somewhere between 8,000 and 9,000 individuals come out of prison each year.
8,000 to 9,000. Okay. So are we incarcerating as many people as we are releasing every year?
We're increasing.
Yeah,
okay. We're incarcerating more. We're on kind of an upward trend.
Okay.
So there are more people going into prison than coming out.
So, Cecilia, one of the things that I found interesting in this report and that really stuck with me was the difference between what the feds sentence people, the federal government sentence people to, and what our state sentences people to. Can you talk about the discrepancy between what Wisconsin does and what the federal government does?
Sure, and I assume that there you're talking particularly about the length of post-imprisonment supervision.
Exactly.
Because there, it's important to notice there are differences in probation rates as well. That's mostly explained, though, by the fact that states and the federal government punish different kinds of crimes as a general rule. On the back end, though, federal sentences certainly are known for being long and being fairly harsh. But the federal government only imposes reasonably short terms of what's called supervised release, that their form of what in Wisconsin we call extended supervision. Typically, people are serving terms of 3 to 5 years when they come out of the federal system in order to help them transition back to the community. The idea being that when you first get out of prison, you have a lot of needs, and also we want to watch you a little more carefully to make sure that you're not getting into trouble as you transition to the community and provide you with some support. But that really, once someone is done serving their prison time, we want to get them back engaged with their families and communities and work as quickly as possible, and then the government needs to exit the picture. By contrast, in Wisconsin, we impose very long periods, or at least authorize very long periods, of post-imprisonment supervision on individuals, so that although many individuals are still only having a few years of supervision, it's possible to have really over a decade of supervision when you're coming out of prison. And the problem with that is that once someone has gotten established in the community, it's secured a job, found housing, is beginning to settle in, at some point that level of constant monitoring gets in the way of success. Very much like I think as parents we think about once our young people become adults, we back out of the picture, we let them connect and move on with their lives. Our criminal justice system in the state isn't very good at letting people get on with their lives, and that seems to be a problem.
So who supervises these people when they're in the communities?
Department of Corrections.
Okay.
Has individuals within the Division of Community Corrections.
Okay.
Called Probation and Parole. PMP agents. So they are usually doing most of the monitoring within the community.
So if I am a PMP agent with the Department of Corrections, how many people am I generally supervising? And what does that mean? I mean, does it mean I'm checking up on them daily? Does it mean I'm having to look in on them? What does that mean, Cecilia?
So, first of all, with very rare exception, people being supervised aren't getting daily levels of supervision. Depending on a person's background, the kind of crime they've committed in the past, their sort of projected risk of future reoffense, they may meet with their agent more or less frequently. And so some individuals are checking in weekly, some individuals are only checking in every few months with their agent, and as long as things are going well, that's all the contact that they really have. Agents can serve a lot of functions. They can provide referrals to support agencies. They often will do some level of direct training and intervention, kind of encouraging people to think about change and to think about setting goals for themselves. And then they provide surveillance and monitoring as well, everything from drug testing to doing home visits periodically. So agents serve a lot of different functions. The number of people they're supervising depends a lot on where they're located geographically in the state, the needs of the local community. So there's a lot of variation there.
So, Julie, the report highlights that some of the issues that need to be addressed are the challenges of substance abuse, the length of supervision that people are on, the need for non-custodial sanctions, challenges of people who move out or who become absent and can't be found, and just better defining what we should be using revocation for. What are some of the suggestions that your reports talk about?
Yeah, so like we discussed earlier, Wisconsin authorizes longer supervision terms than many other states and the federal government. And so based on Cecilia's research and then the additional research we did in conjunction with hers, we should perhaps consider lowering those terms to make us, you know, either in line with the federal government or some. I'm not advocating that we go this low, but I'm just saying some states have their terms as low as 1, 2, or 3 years. One of the main findings from Cecilia's report that we found interesting was that 72% of the revocations occurred within the first 18 months that they were released, and 92% occurred within the first 2 years. And so if we can shorten the lengths of supervision and really focus the time and energy and resources on the first few years that someone is released, perhaps we can help them succeed and hopefully avoid revocation. Because the people who are succeeding and who are on supervision 5, 10 years, they're probably not going to go through a revocation that long into their term. At least that's what the research shows. And so that's something that Wisconsin should consider. Another thing that's interesting that we haven't really talked about yet is a way that you can be revoked, and then you can actually be under extended supervision for much longer than you were ever intended to be. Because in Wisconsin, we don't have what's called compliance credits. So let's say that you are out on supervision and you are revoked in year 4 out of 5, for instance, and you go back to prison, you have to start all over. So you don't get credit for time served in compliance, which many other states, like I said, have what's called a compliance credit, where they would get credit for those times served, the months served. So,
So Kelly, I know that substance abuse is a problem not only in this population, but I mean, right now we're seeing substance abuse problems all over the state. How does someone who needs substance abuse services get them and pass? Or make it through their sentencing and their additional services when there's so limited access to substance abuse services? We have waiting lists for treatment centers. How are we helping this population of people get those treatment services?
Well, we know from the data that has been released in 2016, there was numbers of 71% of the people on supervision had a substantial need for substance abuse treatment. You couple that with the number of people that have mental health diagnoses. So now you have individuals with either one of those or both, the dual diagnosis, and you have a significant need up there. for a number of these people, and we do have an issue of getting the services to the people and getting the people to the services. If you're up in rural Wisconsin and you're one of my clients, you may be traveling hours to get that service when it's finally available. It could take months. It can take years to get that service. So we have to continue to work with policymakers and make sure that this is a priority, that these individuals on supervision get the resources that they need, both in substance abuse as well as mental health treatment. But the waiting lists are long. I think there are, people want to help, but oftentimes if you've had a substance abuse issue for years, going to a meeting, an AA meeting, is not going to be enough for you. You need more, and people are waiting. And while these people are waiting, they're struggling. And while they're struggling, they're suffering. And it's a constant crisis that we are in. So this is something that it has to be a priority. I think it is a priority with many. We're hearing a lot more about mental health issues and the need for treatment, but it's both. And it's making sure that we can provide the resources, and a lot of it is money, but it's not just in financial, it's having access. That access is so important. And when you get outside of some of the urban areas, that access is very, very limited.
All right. Well, stay tuned. There's more to come on this study when we come back.
The League of Wisconsin Municipalities advocates for all of Wisconsin's 602 cities, large and small, rural and urban, speaking up for local democracy and common sense citizen-led government. Learn more at lwm-info.org.
You're listening to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of the Wheeler Report, and today's guests are Julie Grace, Policy Analyst for the Badger Institute, Cecilia Klingel, Associate Professor at UW-Madison Law School, and Kelly Thompson, the State Public Defender. So I want to give each of you an opportunity to just talk about what you think this report really needs, what parts of this report really need to be discussed, or what things am I missing. Let's start with you, Cecilia.
So I think what's really important is for people to understand the complexity of supervision and the complexity of the lives of people on supervision. I think a lot of folks in our communities, policymakers, and ordinary people have a sense that there are things we need to improve. But what I want people to understand is that there aren't simple answers, and simple answers are likely to make complex problems worse. So I think one of the things that we really need to think about are ways that people can be held accountable for violating court-ordered or DOC-ordered conditions of supervision without having to put people in jail cells. Most jails in our state are overcrowded. Jail is costly in terms and in financial terms. There are lots of ways to help people in compliance with reasonable rules other than locking them up. And I think that at low cost often, we can create infrastructures in our communities that let us feel like people on supervision are being held accountable and being helped at the same time, that can reduce revocations, but that don't require custody, and I think we need to get a lot more creative about that.
Perfect. Julie?
Sure. I echo Cecilia's first point, which was that this is a very complicated issue, and there are lots of discussions that are occurring about it, and that's a good thing. But I just want to make sure that we remember that every case is unique, every individual is unique, every individual's needs are unique. I also think that we should point out that, like we've discussed, Wisconsin's prison population is growing, and unfortunately, revocation and entering prison from community supervision is one factor that, you know, plays into that. And so we're not saying that we're just trying to release all offenders into the community, but we need to remember that the point of community supervision is twofold. It is for public safety, and it's also to help these individuals reenter the community and succeed. We want them to succeed. And so if we can, like I said, devote more of the resources into the first 1, 2, and 3 years that they're released. And by the way, save money, of course, by not supervising people for these long terms that don't seem to be in a sense, worth it, then I think that that's one step that we should perhaps look into.
Kelly?
We have to remember that 95% of these individuals are coming back to our communities. And these individuals, we can give them the tools to succeed, both while they're in an institution, if that's where they are, and when they're coming out. It is very complicated. I think this study is a must read for every judge in the state, because the length of sentence is so important, because we see that and the impact that it has, the negative impact it has on individuals. I believe there are people that are doing a terrific job trying to do what they can for these individuals, but our criminal justice system is the least effective and most expensive place to try and solve mental health and substance abuse issues. And so we have to continue to partner up with the community and find community opportunities. We need, when we take someone out of the community for even 48 hours, 2 days, we've disrupted their lives, we've disrupted their families' lives, we've disrupted the community, and we've made our communities less safe. And we have to understand that. So this report is extraordinarily important. I 100% agree that it talks about, it really does identify the complexities of the system, and it is complex. How many individuals are involved in the system, I think, is extraordinarily important. And it really is an issue that we all have to come together to see what we can do and what we can do better. I think the recommendations are terrific. And I think what we need to really focus on is exactly what Julie said, is the individual. These are individual people. And if we can help them have the tools and give them the tools to succeed, my hope is that we will see much fewer revocations in our community and in our criminal justice system.
All right. Well, that's the end of today's podcast. Thank you both. Thank all three of you for coming. And I invite our listeners to go to thewheelerreport.com and click on our podcast blog. It will take you to the report and additional information that we've provided here today. I want to thank our partners in community media, Rice Lake Radio 105.5 FM, Oshkosh Radio 101.9 FM, Wapaka Radio 96.3 FM, and Sun Prairie Radio 103.5 FM. Thank you to the League of Municipalities, the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and the Wisconsin Counties Association for working with me on this podcast. Remember that the Wisconsin Counties Association's conference is coming up later this month, and you don't want to miss that. And thank you to Jackie Johnson for doing all of our sound editing.